suffuse 984 myself and Maura, and I do have to say the energy is already fire. So it's going to be a very good interview. First of all, I do need you to send me any of your questions on 0701-984-984 and the Fuse 984. I'm saying this real early because I know we're going to be getting quite a few questions coming in. Now, I'm hanging out with Mark Kaigua, who is the founder and CEO of Nanda Research and Marketing. Hello, thank you so much for joining us, by the way.
Happy to be here and long-time listener of the Fuse, so it feels pretty great to be here. This is one show I came up on, like, you know, as a young one, so happy to finally take a seat.
No pressure. Thank you. So maybe you can start by saying, what is Nanda Research all about? And then before we get into the market research of Kenya.
Sure. So I think Nando, really our passion is to solve problems and questions where people have the internet, mobile phones and social media. So asking, what are people spending their time and attention on? Where are people investing or spending their mobile data and bundles? And then we ultimately just seek to deliver insights, that's trend reports and research, marketing consumer research, and then also run campaigns on the marketing side. But it's, no 2 days are the same. I got a great team and we're always brimming with like random ideas that we just can't help ourselves but notice about the internet.
I mean, some of your clients have been Safaricom, Population Service, International, NCBA Bank, amongst so many others. And this is quite important when it comes to figuring out how you're marketing to Kenyans. But I want to know from you personally, what has piqued your interest the most in 2024 from your research?
Yeah, I think one of the things for us, and there's a couple, we've always looked at and asked, okay, where, in the US, for instance, Netflix would say years ago that they compete with sleep. So they just want Anne to watch one more episode. They just want Mark to just, you know, let the timer just automatically keep playing. Here in Kenya, it's different because we have these things called bundles, these things called megabytes. So what we have with Kenyans is they have more time and attention than they have mobile data every day. And so because of that, everywhere you look, people are trying to stretch that out. How can I stretch these mobile data bundles? And so for us, I think that's where we came up with, back in 2018, it was a trend. But now we think that, and we've proved it in Egypt, in Algeria, in South Africa, in Tunisia, you know, Rwanda, you name a country in Africa, it happens. You give someone 100 megabytes or 100 gigabytes, what you find is they're following what we call the five S's of the internet. And it's not, you know, some people say, no, that's not me. But in our experience, the second we move from Mark and Anne and how we're different, to 100 of you and 100 of me, similarly age, you know, socioeconomic background, all that, you see the patterns. And that's what we're really spotting. And it's exciting to see this year we've added a sixth S to the list, and we've never done that, I mean, in a couple years.
Maybe you can break them down for me so I can understand a bit better.
Sure. So I think the first one is, if you think about search, so Google is the most visited website in Kenya, no surprises. Android is the preeminent mobile operating system. Anytime I see people with an iPhone, I say, and I realize this doing our field work and our research with people of all backgrounds, not in a bad way, but you don't care about mobile data, right? And we proved this, like, because we were like, at that point, the Facebook app, before you've opened it, on iOS was 500 megabytes. The Facebook app on what was called Facebook Lite on Android was 1 megabyte. Remember, you've not even opened it. You spent half a gig just getting the app. And so generally, that's why Google has an Android and smartphones. There's a lot of first-time smartphone owners and users, thanks to companies like M-Kopa and many others that are making it affordable to walk in and walk out the smartphone and then pay as you go. So that's first. Sport. Now, the most Googled words, one of the most Googled words of the last 15 odd years, typically is not just English Premier League football clubs. I want to say your Chelsea's, your Arsenal's, your Manchester's, etc., but also sports betting companies. So I think we have easily tens of millions at a minimum, or north of 10 million, I should say, Kenyans who participate in sports betting or gaming, as some people would call it. And that's both on one extreme end, you could say a potential public health crisis, like if people don't have responsible gambling and the resources to decide, you know, their level and how they want to participate. But on one hand, because of how electric the English Premier League is in Kenya, and not just here, we've seen this across dozens of countries across Africa, but that's a second way. And then the third is adult websites. Not much to say here. They just are popular on their own, but particularly on mobile phones. So as we see more phones, we see people get more private, that's something that's going to happen. Then you have your TikToks and you have your stories. That's why we have Capital FM. the website, lifestyle, everything you guys do here.
Fantastic. So now the way I'm thinking about it is kind of like Big Brother's watching. So you gather all the information of what we're doing as a country, and then of course you sell that data and information. So I do have to say, when I say something close to my phone, let's say I would like a new apartment, all of a sudden furniture and apartments start to show up on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
What is that about?
Okay, so this one, I feel like everyone has this conspiracy theory. And I'm always saying it like that because that's how it feels. But let me zoom out for you before. Okay, let me cut to the chase. The phone isn't listening. But that doesn't feel like how it feels, right? Because they're like, Mark, I swear, I called somebody, I put down the phone, I opened Facebook, and that's what I saw. Or I opened Instagram, etc. What's happening is we have to realize Facebook, right? Over 16 million Kenyans on there. Facebook is 20 years old this year. All right. I've been on there 18 good years since 2006. So they have a lot of information about us, right? And that's Meta, that's WhatsApp, you add them all up, right? And they're not the only ones, right? Google is just as old, it's actually older, right? And so sometimes what we forget is they have essentially these millions of tiny data points that they've collected over time, right? And there's this phrase that says, if it's free, you're the product, right? Your Gmail is free, your Google search is free. So they're collecting data, and same for Facebook, uploading those photos, those videos, YouTube the same. So that's why what they get really good at is predicting what we want. Not listening, predicting. And what's funny is I'll show you maybe 100 times, you've gotten off the phone, opened your phone, looked at an ad, and it's been irrelevant. But we don't remember those ones. We remember the one where it's like, no, we just talked about like a girl's trip to God knows where. And it's like, how am I seeing Airbnbs pop up in my feed like that? So it's one which, and anytime I say this, and I have videos and evidence, but it doesn't feel like what's really going on. Yeah. And there's something to our feelings too.
Okay. Mark Haigo, I trust you. Mark Zuckerberg, you're still on the fence. Send in your questions on the Fuse 94. We're going to be talking about TikTok trends, how to become a star in 24 hours, and so much more. You can do that on 0701-984-984. Let me tell you something. I'm learning so much behind the scenes, and I love it. It's the Fuse 94, myself and Mara. And we're chatting with Mark Haigo, who is, of course, an African entrepreneur, author, and professional speaker as well, as you can tell. He is the CEO and founder of Nenda, a research and marketing consultancy focused on delivering insights that drive income and impact for their clients, such as Safaricom, Population Services, International, and CBA, to name just so many other people. I really want to get into the conversation on ChatGPT when I think about market research, because I recently read a study that said that Kenyans are one of the highest users of ChatGPT and also use it to write people, foreigners' papers, do their exams and basically their coursework for them. We're being outsourced, so that's one of our biggest outsourcing. So how do you feel about the trends of ChatGPT and Kenya?
Yeah, and I think that Kenya has put itself in a really unique place just over the last 8, 9, maybe even 10 years, where what we've seen is not just business process outsourcing, which says, hey, put on a headset and talk to people in America, in Europe, and give them customer service, but even this entire academic ecosystem that's come out, where there were graduate, undergraduate, PhD, postdoc, you know, researchers who were saying, look, I need an assistant. I need, in some cases, somebody to do all my assignments, tests, and homework. And Kenyans really rose up to the challenge. It's because we're, you know, educated, literate, that type of thing. And so what's happened is that became what some people estimate was a multi, you know, like double-digit million-dollar industry. Mm-hmm. Now, when ChatGPT from OpenAI, you know, what do they call a large language model, which is just a fancy word of saying it. It's like autocorrect on your phone, but it just really has studied many words to try to predict what it thinks you want to see. When that came out, that started to shake the scene. But Kenyans, like you said, have adopted it. I'm actually looking at the data now. So OpenAI.com, which is the parent of ChatGPT, is, you know, has had about 12.5 million visits this is February data, but one of the exciting things is that it's up over 600% the last year, meaning that just we've adopted it and adopted it more than Instagram, you know, to a certain degree, meaning at least just going by this data set from SEMrush, we're seeing that Kenyans are saying, look, I'm not going to get left behind. I want to try it out. And the number of places I've been in all sorts of places, and I can't help myself as a researcher. My eyes are always peeled, right? And you're just always seeing on a phone, somebody's putting in a prompt or some way or the other. And ChatGPT is also getting, its technology is getting into so many more places too. What I was telling you is that, you know, at some point I can take every post Anne has written the last, and I'm not saying in a scary way, but the last 4 years, and I can basically predict what your next couple ones would be. Just not just the captions alone. And that's, to some degree, I could also take every photo you've taken. And obviously, you've probably seen this one where we can upload those photos. And because it'll be like, she likes beach, likes, you know, this type of makeup, this type of hair, this type of like bokeh effect on her camera, we're going to start making a bunch of images. And you'd never leave the studio. And all your friends are like, hey, how was Diani? And how was, like, you know, Dubai and whatever? Because now the same way ChatGPT can do this with words, there's ways to do this with images. The sad part is, I think, for a number of Kenyans is that a lot of these remote workers who are doing these assignments are finding that those American students who would have them on payroll or send PayPal or whatever, some of them are turning to ChatGPT now, or they're making them do more work for less pay. So it has affected the economics of what people previously earning $600, $800, $1,000 a month or more are earning sometimes 25% or more less because of ChatGPT.
I mean, I can see that definitely, because even we have celebrities like Nicki Minaj, Katy Perry coming out and saying, when it comes to the conversation AI, they can now mimic their voice as well. I really don't need Katy Perry to sing me Raw anymore. I can, you know, I can download another version of her. I can have Snoop Dogg sing me Katy Perry's version of Raw, but then that could affect my business because my business is my voice. So I want to know, for the average Kenyan, what are some trends to look out for, especially as the West is moving so fast and we are keeping up with them? What should we be looking out for so we don't get left behind, but also don't get, well, screwed over?
Yeah, I mean, I think one is just lots of questions on data privacy. And I think Kenya already has a number of those conversations going on. The other, which I think is interesting and is sort of the dark side, or the, you know, the underbelly no one sees, is that you have Kenyans who, for the last decade or so, like, AI is not new to Kenya, right? If you get into like a vehicle and a self-driving car in the US, like Waymo or one of the other brands that's out there, saying, you know, in Austin, Texas, or in San Francisco, that self-driving car was likely trained by Kenyans here, right? At a number of different firms that do something called computer vision. It's very like manual labor, but it needs human eyes. So part of what I think the next couple years is just learning and getting your quote unquote feet wet or thumbs, you know, active with just learning a bit about, say, AI. It's genuinely just trying and just seeing, is this for me? It's watching a couple YouTube videos to say, how do I get started? You talked about music. I came across a website a few months ago and then saw it because it's trending a few days ago, called Suno, SUNO.AI. And I don't know if you saw it, but yeah, just the number of prompts you can put in and the type of music you can get back. You could genuinely become a quote unquote AI style artist, where it's like, oh, you know, Anne, I didn't know you sing. It's like, well, I mean, you know, let's hit playback and let's like build a bit of a career off of it. And so it's leveling the playing field in some way, but it is making people feel, hey, how do I protect my IP? I was talking to somebody briefly who, they have a number of incredible creative patterns that they put online, African. Right. And the first thing I asked them, I said, how are you making sure these don't get, you know, tracked and swallowed up by the AI machine? Because what will happen is someone somewhere will, then this is original work, will just basically hit a prompt and get a derivative of that, and you won't get any share in that. Right. So that data privacy bit of where you tell AI, don't track this, don't view this, don't ingest this in the machine, that's really the part that I'd say is a bit of a challenge right now.
All right, keep sending in your questions. I have a very exciting one coming up in just a few. It's going to be one on TikTok and trends. Who makes it, who doesn't, and who chooses? It's 11:35, all thanks to Equity Bank. Don't forget, back to school math planning ahead. Back to school math is planning ahead. And now, when you receive school fees from your relatives abroad, you can use Western Union, you can use MoneyGram, TransFest, and so much more. Don't be worried, though. You can also withdraw with so much ease. All you have to do is go to your nearest Equity branch today. Access your funds, and there you go, Equity Bank, your money transfer partner for sure. I do want to say a massive shout out to you, Kathy, as well, on Twitter /X, whatever you want to call it. He says, shout out to Mark, the social media guru. So let's talk to the social media guru. I want to know from you, what trends are you seeing when it comes to TikTok? Because in the States, they're trying to ban TikTok for children under the age of 14. And about 14 years old. So what trends are you seeing on TikTok in Kenya?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say something first on that bit of kids and TikTok. I think there is, and I say this as somebody who has very publicly, like, I have 3 kids, 8, 5, and 2 turning 3. And you know, for us, we have a bit of like a strange-ish, you know, relationship with technology because I work so much in that, you know, sort of like world. I got all this stuff on me all the time. And so, yeah, generally, it's something to be really cautious about with kids. And if you want, you know, a bit of like context, I mean, all of the, you know, the most, you know, the Mark Zuckerbergs, et cetera, all of, you know, the, let's call them the biggest tech entrepreneurs, effectively have their kids living almost a completely tech-free life, mm-hmm. right? For up to the first 15 odd, or at least certainly until teenagers. And there's purpose to that. There's, you know, a sensibility to that because a lot of these devices are engineered. I mean, obviously, you don't need to recount this Netflix, you know, show the social dilemma. But I think there's genuine concern there because of the neural pathways, right? So just that dopamine hit that we get when we swipe up and it's another video. And it feels a bit like, you know, sort of a slot machine, right? Where you're just getting like this, you know, hypodermic needle into your veins. And for young minds, I mean, real quick, there's a part of the brain which you and I, you know, used to make, you know, like executive function decisions in life. And it doesn't develop until you're about 25, you know. And so basically for kids, there's meaning behind that. Now for TikTok, though, I think TikTok in Kenya is the game changer and has been for a couple of years. And Nando, we've published, you know, thousands of words and however many minutes of video and content around it. I think for me, what excites me about TikTok is how what I'd call egalitarian or how equal the algorithm is in terms of just who it favors. So I have seen Kenyan Indians, you know, Kenyan Somalis, all you know, Kenyans of all backgrounds, socioeconomic classes, you know, regional like places, and that to me is the X factor because I could show you, and I remember showing some people in a conference. There's a lady, you know, called Mini Cheps, who some people know. She's been part of the TikTok Creator Academy. I had a one screenshot I had to just show people the power of TikTok. She done 40 million views mm-hmm. on TikTok within maybe about 3.5 weeks. And I said, there's no musical artist, there's no YouTuber, there's no Instagrammer, there's no one who is doing numbers like that. Now, she's not alone. It's just an example. And it's that idea that like, you're like, wait, what in the world? Like, and some of that was for brands too. Now, I think that brands don't pay the fair share of what TikTokers are worth, but that's a long-standing mm-hmm. issue. But I think what we call the Mashinani Mavens or the people who are up country, outside the beaten path, no ring light, no makeup, not, you know, no fancy smartphone, they are people doing crazy numbers and talking truth to the nation.
You know, let me say something. That is my favorite form of TikTok because it's so raw and so real. And I want to go back to actually the payment. Yeah, some brands really, most brands actually in Africa in general don't pay what they should. But then you'll see like it's an international brand and then in the States they'll fly them around the world. They'll give them this and that and the other. But the same people in Kenya are making the same numbers as someone in the States. So I am very curious if you are a brand owner, why are you doing that to your people? But outside of that, do you think it waters down industries that have been established for such a long time? Because it's kind of like an old versus new situation. I keep saying I should have been dancing during the pandemic.
No, like for real though.
I wish, because some of these kids be making numbers where I've spent 6 years, mm-hmm. You know, scraping and saving and doing. Do you think it waters down certain industries that have been there in place for a long time, or is it its own avenue?
I think it's its own avenue because it's going to give, let's say, Gen Z a way to one-up, you know, millennials who were then trying to one-up, you know, the generation before them when sort of Facebook came. I mean, I remember, like, for myself, I was working a job and I had been writing about social media. And I'm going to age myself here. I'm a bit of like a sort of like doing this for donkey years, but in 2009. And I remember Larry Madu, a far skinnier, more like, you know, younger version of him, puts out this tweet. He's working at KTN at the time. After months of asking, I've convinced, you know, all the executive producers just to give me a slot to do a social media interview. And so it goes out on Twitter back in those days. People nominate me, complete strangers to me. And I end up, you know, sort of calling in sick in the morning going, and then, you know, the people who I worked for saw me on TV. It was a problem. But I say that because I had no business being there, right? How young I was, how inexperienced I was, what I didn't know my head from my tail, but I knew a lot about this social media thing. And so that allowed me that. And I think it's the same with TikTok. There are people now who are going to completely throw the rule book out. And there, I mean, you look at TikTok's even virtual currency, and there's some problems with the virtual currency, I'll say it, maybe not for now, but there are people who just off of the lives, right? So you go live mm-hmm. and you're receiving these gifts. And so if you're a Kenyan TikToker with an audience overseas, particularly if you're talking about Kenyans in the diaspora, your US, UK, or Dubai and the MENA region, I mean, genuinely, there's people getting a, I mean, I don't say it's a big bag, but yeah, well, they're making something, right? And that's not some, there's people put in time on Instagram. And it took, you know, weeks ago when, you know, Nick Clegg from Facebook, President Ruto announced that monetization is happening. But it's been how long? 20 years of publishing into the, not the void. And then, like you're saying, brands trying to work with creators. But like, what? So the point for me is because agencies recommend influencers, yeah, right? There's a bit of something there. And then clients themselves want an influencer that I know or that looks like me and feels like me, not necessarily my audience. So TikTokers get especially sidelined, right, where they don't make as much as Instagrammers or Facebookers or anyone else.
And that's what brings me into, when they do make it, they definitely do make it. And congratulations to all who have. Now, who chooses who makes it? Because you've been watching all the social media. You've seen all the trends. I mean, we're going to get into LinkedIn as well, because that's becoming a little social media hub of its own, right? So who makes it and who doesn't? Because I see some people with amazing quality, right? They've got the best camera, the best writing, the best content, and they're not pulling in the numbers, they're not pulling in the brands. And you see, you know, my auntie over there, up your country, you know, with her phone, and she's doing the thing. So how are we choosing? From what you've seen, what are the trends of how we choose who makes it and who doesn't?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think for one, it's I'd say fishing where the fish are. So all of us are in a boat. We're all trying to cast our net, all trying to catch something, right? Let's assume those are audiences. So fishing where the fish are for me means if I was a creator, which to some lesser degree I am still, in 2024, I'm starting today. And in the next 90 days, I'm genuinely trying to have some sort of breakthrough moment. And I'm going in with a beginner's mind, not like, like anything else. Then you're going to TikTok, right? You're trying especially short minute or less content. You know, you can try if you want also, you know, they're encouraging longer form content if you can get the watch time. But basically we're talking vertical video. We're talking, now to get technical, shot in the app, which makes it monotonous. You got to shoot it in TikTok, edit, post there, because they know when you did it in CapCut, when you did it in IG, anywhere else. And then you're probably re-recording and re-recording some of that content and just putting that into the void and seeing. You're trying questions, you're trying challenges, etc. But that is kind of the playbook. Because on Instagram, with Reels, you do that. You might do more than anyone with stories, taking nothing away from that. Or with the regular feed, which feels like a bit of a museum right now, is a bit of a relic, but it's still important. And so that's what I do. And then you take the same content, you go to YouTube and you go strictly shorts. And so you're doing vertical video consistently, trying to do it in app a couple times a week if you want, depending on where you're coming from. And you're trying to find your audience. You're essentially, sadly, throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. But at some point, you may have the opportunity. I think the place that gives you the break is more likely TikTok. They have this thing that came up in an investigation a couple years ago they call heating. And heating is when some of the, I don't want to make it sound like, evil, but the I don't say puppet masters or whatever, but the hands behind the algorithm, right? Because they are human, moderators can say, this person needs a bit of like love. Let's put some heat on this. And you just watch somebody who's been hitting, average, whatever numbers, do silly numbers like off of one video. And sometimes they can't figure out why. So that sometimes does bring a challenge. There's even this entire like sub genre of like the internet with people who are resentful that they have to create content for a living, and the fact that they can't hit the highs they once hit. But that's sort of like, that's inside baseball a bit for like content creators.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're going to get into that as well, because we do have quite a few content creators. And of course, we have a lot of your questions. We're going to be getting into them in just a few. So you can keep sending them in on 0701984984. I definitely want to know, do we need to be on all social media? And how did LinkedIn become one of them? It's the Fuse at 984, and I told you it's going to be a very interesting interview, because I'm learning so much behind the scenes. There's so much to cover. There's so many of your questions as well to get to, so we're going to do that in just a few. If you don't know, if you're a little bit late, we're talking to Mark Kaigua, who is, of course, an entrepreneur, author, and a professional speaker. And he's the founder of Nendo, and they do digital research, marketing, and communications. They do this for over 20 countries as well in Africa, delivering their work in English, Swahili, French, Pidgin, and even Portuguese. I could give the CV. It's so long. You can find it online as you are getting your questions as well. But I wanted to get into some of people's questions. Let's talk about cyberbullying and trolls. Is it illegal? What are you seeing with the market research in Kenya? Because don't forget, we've been named the biggest bullies of the internet, KOT. Still survives, or KOX still survives. So what do you see with that market research?
Yeah, and I think that it is true, and I've written a lot about and been on a lot of interviews and done, I mean, almost even like mini documentaries about Kenyans on X, formerly known as Kenyans on Twitter, and so much more of what makes Kenya's internet ecosystem special. There's a, you know, like a book chapter that's free and available online called From the Cyber Cafe to the Smartphone, which is just like a like 12-year journey of how Kenyans on Twitter did what they did, to where they've gotten, you know, speeches rewritten by presidents, and all sorts of crazy things all over the world. So so there's that aspect of respect there. The dark side is some of the harms. At Nendo right now, we're running a project called Dada Disinfo, and it's in this emerging space called online gender-based violence. Because what some people sometimes assume is that, you know, to hurt me or to harm me, you need to touch me. What the things that people can do through phones alone, through technology, through laptops, desktops, tablets, you name it, is just as bad, particularly for our mental health and our overall, you know, self-esteem and well-being. And so what we're seeing and learning about that's happening, you know, to teenagers in school that might be causing even them to get, again, you know, to undergo real, you know, stress or mental, you know, anything from anxiety to, in some cases, clinical situations like depression, or even going as far as to where there's even self-harm and certainly self-image being affected. And it doesn't stop there. There's people in their 30s and 40s plus who are enduring these different forms of online gender-based violence. So when you talk about trolling and you talk about cyber abuse, sometimes we laugh it off, say, ah, you know what? And I've heard people tell me this in some of the interviews we've done with established content creators who are saying, you know what? Kenyans on Twitter just like that. Or, no, just grow a thick skin. It's part of the job. You're a public figure. And yet people are going to great lengths to do great harm, particularly to women, but we've seen it with men as well. And obviously people, you know, across, you know. And so, yeah, for me, it's a massive concern. And I think that in our research, we're seeing that there needs to be a genuine reckoning and conversation that this is, in some cases, actually a crime, or it's actually a problem that can have consequences for people, not just just what they do online.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was telling you behind the scenes, I've worked with some mental health organizations where we were talking about sextortion, which especially in teenagers. Mm-hmm. So let's say, unfortunately, your teenager sends a nude, or she sends a video, and then now the person tries to like bait them. They try to get money from them. They Correct. Extort them online, and then of course this can lead to high suicide rates, especially we've seen in the States as well. Mm-hmm. Now I wanted to also get into one more thing: engagement baiting. Okay, so I'm gonna call them out. Those forex traders you see on the spamming messages call Judy or call Ben or call Samuel. He helped me get XYZ amount of money. All the messages you see, if you miss this sound, you're going to miss $5,000 today. Like this picture of this frog to get, you know what
That's
I mean?
That's right.
Yeah, so how does this affect Kenyans? Because I also see a lot of aunties resending messages on WhatsApp, being, you know, like forwarded so many times. What have you seen when it comes to this trend of engagement baiting?
Yeah, no, I think historically we are falling victim to some very like straightforward human behavior, you know, things like fear of missing out or being left behind, etc., or feeling like, yeah, I can't be one of the ones who breaks the chain. I mean, and this goes back, right? Like, you know, you might recall chain mail, which is like, send this to 10 friends. And it sounds bizarre now, but it happens on WhatsApp every day. And it's like, don't break the chain. We've been sending this to 6 groups, you know, send it to 5 more to unlock your blessing or unlock your voucher from company X and Y. And so for our beloved aunties and uncles, to be quite fair, on WhatsApp, you know, the ones that wear the glasses at the bridge of their nose and sort of like take the selfie looking like that. I think there's much that can be said there, but they are purely just interacting with different parts of the internet aimed to hook you a bit. So engagement bait is, now that there's AI images, for instance, there's been a lot of these photos that have Jesus in the clouds. So they got Jesus in a pond, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, like this really happened in Africa in a village or in the middle of God knows where. And the problem they're trying to do is just they need, you know, every, let's say, 5 posts, they're going to have a little paid post or something that's a little scammy. To keep the algorithm up, they need everybody saying amen. They need everybody saying their blessings. They need everybody coming in. And so they take advantage of people who but innocently just want to be like, yes, I want to claim that blessing. Yes, I want to listen to that sound. And yes, I want to afford this as an auntie because I genuinely think that these people mean well, but I'm playing into how they're using the algorithm to profit off of it.
And lastly, what about those who've been left behind online? So I'm talking about the ones who don't even know what a ChatGPT is. I mean, they just maybe got WhatsApp recently. Will they be able to survive in this economy and this world, this fast digital paced world that we're moving in?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that. And I think we had a post that upset a bunch of people, a blog that I wrote a few weeks ago on Nendo's website, nendo.co.ke/blog. And it was that Kenyans don't care about privacy. They care about not being surprised. And is the long argument is that if you really do want privacy, you're going to have to sacrifice a lot of things, right? So give me that smartphone and I'll give you back a kabambe. Or I might not give you a phone at all. We're going to take M-Pesa off as well because someone now has a log of all of your money in, money out. And so what sometimes, again, to use an example, is when I pay somewhere, I want the convenience of paying. I don't want the surprise of getting the phone call, right? If you're a waitress, hey, someone's asking for a tip, and there's all sorts of other, you know, gender situations like this. If you're an online seller who's, you know, a woman, hey, this guy, you know, his customers asked for this, you know, is he going to send M-Pesa? And for some people, they're like, that's why I got a pay bill. That's why I have a till number, because I'm not giving you my line like that because of all these other things that could come, you know, with it. And so I think there are some people who are disconnected. And by choice, I actually think it's one of the highest forms of privilege. The privilege to say, I don't have a credit card. I don't have this. I don't have that. I have, you know, cash, and I move in this sort of way. So the blog post goes into that because for a lot of us, we love the convenience. But the challenge is actually that what we don't want at all is to be surprised when I get an interruption or I get even a recommendation based on my data, but I didn't ask for that. And so I think on one hand, I'd say that the work that needs to be done is taking Kenyans who aren't yet, like, you know, you and I know what 1,000 shillings is. But if I give you 1,024 megabytes and me as well, and then we go 6 different ways, 20 kilometers in each way, that's where things crumble. Where we're like, how much is 100 MB? How do I control that? Because it's literally eating money out of my wallet. And so that's where the underconnected, the disconnected, and the people who are really, really sensitive. There's some people, genuinely, I've seen it in some of our studies, they have a physical reaction when they're not in control of their data. They turn the data off because they're like, I don't want to use more data than I need because I need to, and my lifeline is WhatsApp. I could have a job. I could have a family emergency or situation I'm looking at there. I can't be on any one of these other platforms. So for people like that, there's an education piece. Even you think about the government, you know, you'd mention that. 5,000 digital services. What I haven't heard enough of, which we've been publishing for like well over 2 years, you have to spend to educate people how to actually get involved. More taxes get filed in a cyber cafe than any single other place that's formerly the revenue authority. But what are we doing to work at that level? Not enough, if you ask me.
There you go. Let's get the news and then back to the feud.